righty, hello again, everyone, and welcome to it, the Daily Daily Caller Podcast for the third day of September 2019. And it's back to school day for people who, well, the kids who go back to school. This was, I always remember going back to school on the Thursday after Labor Day, but it seems like everywhere is going the day after Labor Day for at least a half day. Anyway, sucks. For them. I'm Derek Hunter. I am your host. Welcome to the program. Thank you for listening. Thanks for sharing. Thanks for telling a friend. Thanks for all the stuff that you guys do to spread the word about this program. It wouldn't exist and it certainly wouldn't grow without you. So thank you for that. You can email me, Derek, D-E-R-E-K, at dailycaller.com. And you can enter to win a signed copy of James Hassan's book, Stand Down, at that very email address. It's just that easy. Yeah, the long weekend is over. Everybody's back to work. The kids are back to school. Oh, this was like the worst time when I was a kid. Anyway, I'm not a kid anymore. But that brings to that brings you to real life problems and issues, and that's where we come into our sponsor, Life Change Tea. It's a game changer. Since I've been drinking Life Change Tea, I've had so much energy, feel so much better. Can't tell you how much better I feel. How does it work? Life Change Tea is a proprietary herbal formula. It's a gentle daily cleanse. It's the tea that makes you go to get rid of those harmful little hangers-on inside your body. Let's face it, our food was different 60 years ago. It was minimally processed, free of pesticides, nourishing and healthy for your body. Today, not so much. GMOs, pesticides, herbicides, and heavy processing have depleted the nutrition from our food. It's no wonder you feel run down. That's why you need Life Change Tea. You got to clean your innards out so that your body can absorb the nutrients that are still in our food. You're being blocked. Get ready for more energy. I drink it every day. Life Change Tea is not available in stores. Go to getthetea.com. That's getthetea.com. Enter the promo code Derek, and you get free shipping at checkout. It's just that easy. Use as directed. You don't want to overdo it. You just want to use what they tell you to use. You drink it every day, and you will see your energy rise. Getthetea.com. Okay, can I talk about Hurricane Dorian for a second? I kind of unplugged over the weekend. I recorded the intro bit for the Roger Simon interview, and I got your emails. I know the audio isn't great. That's my problem with Skype. That's why I don't like doing Skype interviews. But when you got a chance to interview Roger Simon, to my mind, you take the chance to interview Roger Simon just because he's not in Washington to come into the studio and you don't have the budget to fly off to him. You got to take the opportunities as they come. So I wasn't paying that much attention to the news. It was a nice break, and it was kind of a slow news time, aside from the shooting down in Texas. Well, I flip on the news on Monday to check out what's going on, and I'm looking around, and if they went wall-to-wall with Hurricane Dorian coverage. I kind of flipped it on and off throughout the weekend, and I always saw the hurricane stuff, and I'm like, oh, you know, they're getting ready for the hurricane. And by Monday, that was all they could or would talk about. And I think I speak for everybody. Maybe I don't. Maybe I'm just an insensitive jerk. And if that's the case, email me, because I need to know. You know, I'd like to know if I'm a jerk. I have a passing interest in Hurricane Dorian, especially when it's 3 days out. Okay, we don't need the 3 days worth of hype. Unless you live in Florida, and my in-laws live in Florida, and I want them to be safe, but part of living in Florida is the realization that you're going to get hit with hurricanes every once in a while. And Florida building codes prepare for that. They require that. So you're not living down in shanties down in Florida. These are some of the sturdier residences the country has to offer. So when a storm is 3 to 5 days out, and here it is, it's either late Monday night or early Tuesday morning, depending on what time, where it is, where you are. the storm is still at least a day away from hitting Florida, if it'll hit Florida at all. But 2 days ago, it was all about, oh my God, this gigantic storm, it's going to come to Florida. We're evacuating. And then they all send their reporters down there to stand on the beach, get rained on, get blown around, get possibly hit by signs and trees. How'd you like to be that guy? The government has called for a mandatory evacuation because the situation down there is so deadly and so dangerous that they need to remove all human beings and every animal they can out of the area just as a precaution. It's going to be that bad. If you stay, you're going to die. But, Joe, you're going to go down there and you're going to stand on the beach and talk about how it's raining and how it's windy all the time. Really? We've all seen hurricanes. We've all seen footage from hurricanes. We've all seen reporters standing in wind and getting rained on and narrating what they're... I love when they... I mean, that's all hurricane coverage is. It's a shot outside the window or from the balcony going, it's raining. The wind is coming and the rain is going sideways. And now the street is flooding. Like, yeah, okay, you got pictures of... There's video that goes along with that. We get it. We don't need the wall-to-wall coverage. Give the warning. Say, get out of the way, or stock up, and then update us occasionally on it, and then show us the aftermath. And let's, you know, hope that everything goes well. But the 24-hour nonstop, we must, well, the storm could be. And this is what annoys me the most. And I know I'm going off on a rant here about hurricane coverage, but most news coverage is awful. Hurricane coverage is particularly awful. They talk about things that haven't happened yet. And in the case of Dorian, at least as of the latest computer models, aren't going to happen. Remember last week when the story was Dorian could come up as a Category 4 or 5 and cut right across Florida and go into the Gulf and then strengthen again and go up and hit Alabama or Georgia? It would be devastating. This could be a monster storm. And that was all they were obsessing about. And then suddenly they go, oh, wait, now it's just going to park out at the Bahamas, devastate the Bahamas, and then it's going to head up the coast about 50 to 80 miles out, and then you're going to get some rain and some surf. Like, okay, how about you report what is? And recognize that weather is unpredictable. This is what drives me nuts about the climate change true believers, the orthodox climate changers. And if you hear Baby Shark in the background, it's because my daughter is playing with the iPad. She's refusing to sleep. And watching, I need her to be quiet so I can record. But they, in the build-up to this thing, there was all the, my God, this Category 5 storm. This would go to Category 5. And do you realize how devastating that could be? And immediately after that, once they started floating around the idea that it could be a Category 5, you started getting the usual suspects. Get down. Get down. Just climbing on an exercise bike. You started getting the usual suspects, the preachers of doom and gloom and horror and of fear, saying that this is going to be devastating. You can't believe a Category 5 hurricane is so rare. And so out of the ordinary, it couldn't possibly be anything other than climate change. And this is why we need to make dramatic changes in how we are as a society. When this Category 5 hits Florida, it's going to be devastating. And finally, the people will... And then it stopped. And you're like, oh, crap. All these people are going, oh, man. They were rooting for a Category 5 to hit Florida. They really wanted the death and destruction. So I thought, well, wait a second. Are Category 5s really that rare? Like, I seem to recall there being some Category 5s in my lifetime. So I did a quick Google search. And it's amazing how many Category 5s there have been. If you just look at the list by month, the number of Category 5 hurricanes, and this will blow a hole in the leftist talking points. In July, this is for recorded history, not, I mean, going back to 1924. The number of Category 5 hurricanes recorded in July are 1. That's it. Well, it's early on in hurricane season. Then you get to August. There have been 8 Category 5 hurricanes registered in August. Then you get to, well, let's come back to September. Then you get to October, and there have been 6 Category 5 hurricanes. And then there's 1 back in November. That's basically the entirety of hurricane season. But I did skip September because we're in September. The rare strength of a Hurricane 5 tornado that we heard about all weekend. There have been 20 recorded Category 5 hurricanes in the month of September since 1924. 20 of them. So you think, well, maybe they've gotten worse. Maybe they've gotten more frequent. Maybe, no, they haven't. In fact, there were more before 1971 than there have been since 1971. And the first one, 1924, lasted for 12 hours. It hit Cuba, killed 90 people, and go just four there. So you talk about the rarity of a hurricane, Category 5 hurricane. Just in October of last year, there was a Category 5 hurricane. Hurricane Michael lasted only for a half an hour, but still there was a Category 5 hurricane. And you hear these stories nonstop, and then you look at the reality, and there is a giant difference, a chasm between what the people on cable news and really news in general and the reality of a situation. There's just a gigantic gulf between those two. Why? Because nobody would watch hurricane coverage 3 days out. Unless you scared the crap out of people. Am I right? Unless if you're trying to just inform people, your coverage over the weekend and late last week is basically there's a big storm out there, could hit Florida. Be prepared. You might have to evacuate. This one has potential to become pretty big. Just be alert. Follow the news and be smart. Do what the authorities tell you. They're out there trying to protect you. Well, who's going to watch that? Nobody's going to watch that. So you have to scare the living hell out of people. It's a gigantic storm. It could be unprecedented. Historic storm. The devastation could be mind-blowing. All of those phrases and more were uttered on cable news over the last 5 days about something that might happen. Now it looks like, luckily, thankfully, it won't happen. So what do you do with that information that you got over the last 5 days? I really wish people didn't have the attention span of a gnat and would look at this and go, stop lying to us. Because this will happen sooner or later. There will be a big storm and people will say, look, you got to be ready to evacuate. Let's get out of town. This monster's coming to town. And people will look back and go, well, you know, for a week solid, you hyped Hurricane Dorian. And it turned, or it lessened, it weakened. It's not even, I'm not going to leave. And lives will be lost because ratings were sought. That's really the problem here. The nonstop hype, the quest for ratings, and I got nothing against ratings. But when you're a news organization, you have a choice. You come to a fork in the road. Do you go with honesty or do you go with sensationalism? Down the road of honesty, you're going to get people. The people are going to watch. You know, you wouldn't spend 5 days on a freaking hurricane, but you'll, you know, talk about it and then move on. But down the road of sensationalism, down the road of having 3 correspondents on the east coast of Florida standing out in the elements being pattered with occasional rain, you might get some ratings because people are going to want to know, has the devastation started? There's a morbid bit of human nature that asks that question. Has the carnage started? It's the reason people watch those high wire walkers. It's the reason why daredevils and stuntmen attract an audience. Are they going to crash? If you look on YouTube, there are more views for skateboarding videos and bike riding videos where somebody's trying to do a stunt and crash horribly, then there are views of people trying to do a stunt and accomplishing it successfully. I'm not breaking ground. I'm not attacking human beings. I'm just saying I'm acknowledging human nature. That's what draws attention. Something could happen. We want to see whether or not it will happen. Nobody will watch, you know, hey, here's a video of everything going smoothly. That's not going to be as big draw as you won't believe what happened next, or what happened next will horrify you, something like that. There's a reason people write those headlines. That's the nature of the news coverage leading up to this storm. And quite frankly, unless you live in Florida or have family in Florida or live in South Carolina or going up the coast there, this doesn't impact you at all. Maybe if you're trying to fly. So why the hype? Why? Because it's kind of a slow news time. And they know that they can sensationalize this. They can scare the crap out of people and interest people who otherwise would have none whatsoever. No interest whatsoever. This 5 days of news coverage, and I imagine the next week of news coverage, is going to be sensationalistic crap. If this hurricane turns out to be the dud that it looks like it's going to be, they're not really going to acknowledge it until it's all over. Why? Because then once it's all over, they got to stop talking about it anyway. And then they'll go, you know what? We dodged a bullet there. We got really, really lucky. Not, my, we probably shouldn't have spent the last 7 days wildly speculating about something that may or may not happen and turns out didn't. Anyway, that is my two cents. And I do want to give an example of a presidential candidate using this to, well, they're all doing it. This is climate change. CNN's got their big climate change powwow tomorrow. The 7 hours, 7 hours, 10 candidates, 7 hours talking nonstop about climate change. You got to, like, how many different things are there to talk about in climate change that you need 7 hours for 10 candidates? Wouldn't the first, maybe the first two candidates cover everything? And then what? You've got 5 hours and 20 minutes left of people just repeating what the first two said? It's going to be terrible. Anyway, they're all going to be on board with this. If they're all kind of disappointed, because if Dorian follows the track that they're expecting now, it won't hit the United States, at least not as a very strong storm. And the talking points that they have been working on for this, you know, Dorian, Hurricane Dorian, the devastation from Hurricane Dorian down in Florida is evidence that climate change is real and we must do something now. Yes, the Bahamas are being hammered and it's awful and sorry for the people down in the Bahamas. But I look at it this way. If you live in Tornado Alley, you gotta prepare for tornadoes. If you live in a floodplain, you probably should prepare for floods. And if you live in the Gulf, in the Caribbean, you gotta be prepared for hurricanes, because that's where they happen. Alaska, probably don't have to buy hurricane insurance up there. But if you live in the Bahamas, you live in a Caribbean island, you live in Florida, you have to recognize that's where they happen. They are not more frequent. In fact, since Katrina, they've become less frequent major hurricanes. We were lied to after that one, by the way. But that's just the way it is. Yet these people who tell, when it, you know, it snows in winter and it's cold, and you say, oh, where's climate? Where's global warming when I need it? They immediately snap to attention, go, weather is not climate. You're talking about weather. Weather is not climate. That's completely different. Stop calling weather climate. You're just doing this to confuse people. Weather is not climate, they say. And then when a hurricane comes along, in hurricane season, where hurricanes have happened always, they say, well, look at this. This is clearly climate change, and we've got to do something immediately, if not sooner, to save the planet. What I'm saying is they're raging freaking hypocrites, but you already knew that. Speaking of raging freaking hypocrites, here is Joe Biden talking on the subject of Hurricane Dorian.
Action. What do you say to Americans who are just frustrated, who don't believe this political process is actually going to be able to do anything? Well, it has to do something. Look, it's about time the president got out of his state of denial on two really critical things. And they both came to a head this weekend. One is climate change. It is an existential threat. This guy can no longer deny the science. I mean, if we could call, well, if there were a parliamentary system, we'd call for elections tomorrow, not because we're in good or bad shape, but because we can't wait another 18 months for something to happen in terms of climate. What's he need? Does he need, Gabriel to come down and say, hey, this is a real problem? I mean, it's gigantic what's happening. The largest storm in the Atlantic, anyway.
The largest storm in the Atlantic ever, at Category 5. Yeah, it was a Category 5 for a while. Now it's a Category 4. It's expected to be a Category 3 by tomorrow, and it's, but, yes, it is. You're breaking up my rhythm, Quinn. Let's turn off Peppa Pig here for a minute, okay? You wanna weigh in on climate change? It's your future we're talking about. Yeah, okay. You smell like you did what Joe Biden is spewing.
Big smell. Smell.
Yeah, that's true. Did Quinny poop? Did you poop?
A mammo.
Mammo. You like PJ Mask?
Pam-risk.
Yeah, she calls PJ Mask Moo Mask for some weird reason. Anyway, Joe Biden is sitting there basically saying, because this was over the weekend when this storm was a Category 5 and all the predictions were doom and gloom, that this monster was going to hit Florida and devastate Florida. So he jumped the gun. He preemptively said, well, look what's going on down there. It's devastating, this monster storm. Well, the storm is weakening. The storm is slowing. The storm is turning north. All of the things Joe Biden was preaching there ended up changing dramatically. Now, will Joe Biden's attitude toward climate change dramatically? Will anybody? Because we were told, oh, look, there's going to be devastation. It's going to be awful. We're going to have to evacuate. We might not be able to get back into eastern Florida for, years. It could be so devastating, this thing hit. And it didn't. They were selling it to us as though it were climate change. Since it fluttered, since it didn't happen, will they then go, well, you know what? I was wrong about that one. No, of course they won't. What they'll do is they'll use the Bahamas as an example. Well, the Bahamas was devastated, and that's because of this. It's the same thing they tried to do with Puerto Rico. Look at the devastation in Puerto Rico. Okay, let's look at the devastation of Puerto Rico. Puerto Rico is poor territory. It has a corrupt government, and they had lax building codes. Do you really think that the Bahamas is state of the art? If you want to know what would happen to the United States if Dorian had hit the Florida coast at a Category 5, check out what happens to the resorts in the Bahamas. You know, the places where rich Americans go, not, the place where Bahama people, the Bahamians or whatever people who live in the Bahamas are called. Look at where the rich tourists go. Those will have been built to the best codes. They would have been built to the U.S. codes. Why? Because they get hit by hurricanes pretty regularly. That's why. And they will withstand it. Why? Because there's money to be made off of it. Corrupt third world governments. And make no mistake about it, the Bahamas, they always say, oh my God, the water's so blue and the Bahamas are great. And all your friends, they go to the Bahamas to go fishing or they go to a resort. They don't stay at a Motel 6 by the airport. They're not just checking out the historic sites. They go as part of a tour group or they go to a resort where they stay on the ground. That's the same thing for most of the Caribbean. The areas where tourists go are taken care of. Why? Because the government makes a ton of money off of them. A ton of money off of them. And a lot of that is in graft. Where the people actually live, that's where you can see, that's where the government really is who they are. Show who they are. Where the houses are devastated and destroyed. Because they don't care about their people. The problem isn't the size or the strength of the storms. The problem is the governments. The governments that allow people to, well, I don't care how you live, as long as these massive resorts get taken care of and I can keep getting my money, I'm perfectly fine with whatever happens to anybody else. So Joe Biden, circumstances have changed dramatically from when he gave that statement. He won't change his tune whatsoever one iota. I'm so used to stupid things being right from Joe Biden. Bernie Sanders, who is also no stranger to stupid things, was on his Twitter account over the weekend and insisting that anybody who doesn't believe in climate change shouldn't be in Congress. That's who these people are. That's how these people are. Bernie Sanders tweeted, quote, "If you don't believe in climate change, you should not be in Congress." For all the pearl clutching from our friends in the media over the things that Donald Trump has tweeted and said, nothing is as big a threat to the American way of life than that tweet from Bernie Sanders. If you don't believe in climate change, you should not be in Congress. If you don't believe what I believe, if you don't agree with me, you should be stripped of your power. You have no business being anywhere near. Forget representation. If you believe what he doesn't believe, he doesn't want you to have a say in your government. For Donald Trump's tweets about, oh, the media is terrible, they're fake news, or even, I wish I could change libel laws so these people could be sued and have some, you know, responsibility for their ridiculous statements. That's not nearly as dangerous to our liberty and to the spirit of this country as what Bernie Sanders says right there. You should be silenced. You should be shut out of power if you don't agree with me. It's, of course, it'll get no play. It'll get no coverage. It will get no outrage. Donald Trump tweets a GIF or a GIF. I catch hell no matter which way I say it from people. A GIF or a GIF of himself tackling the CNN logo, and Brian Stelter wets himself and goes, "This is a threat to all of us, the human potatoes out there going, I can't believe that Donald Trump is threatening violence against journalists. Oh, no." No, sorry, potato. That is him saying something. Bernie Sanders is actually calling for removing. You have no business. You should not be in Congress. Not, I wouldn't vote for somebody who thinks that way. It's, you should not be in Congress. And you know Bernie Sanders, if he got his hands on the levers of power, he would do all he could to implement that. I mean, you don't vacation in the Soviet Union, or not vacation, honeymoon in the Soviet Union by accident in the 80s. You don't do that by accident. You go, you know what? We threw a dart at the map and it came up with the Soviet Union. So what are you going to do? No, you go there by choice. You go there by choice and you choose it because you agree with them. You agree with their philosophy. You agree with their concept of power. Bernie Sanders is significantly more dangerous than Donald Trump could ever be. Hell, all of these Democrats. As I guarantee you, that sentiment will be echoed by many of them, and it is shared by all of them in secret. Some of them just have the tact not to say it. So, yeah, I thought that was interesting. Bernie Sanders, if you don't believe in climate change, you should not be in Congress. Scary, scary times. Speaking of climate change, the big UN summit is coming up on the subject soon. Oh, don't you feel better now knowing that a whole bunch of bureaucrats from despotic regimes are going to get together in New York and discuss ways to remake our economy so that they can punish us? And God, what a joke. What an absolute joke. Then you've got, at the big star attraction at the UN Climate Summit, or whatever the hell it's being called, is the Swedish 16-year-old named Greta Thunberg or Thunberg or Turdburglar, whatever. I don't know how you pronounce it in Swedish. It's spelled like Thunberg, but it's probably pronounced Thunberg. She's the one who sailed across the ocean. She wanted to have a zero carbon emissions trip over to the United States to impress upon the world the importance of climate change and how everything must be upended and uprooted. She started skipping school a while back on Fridays to go and protest in front of the Capitol over there. It is, she's being exploited. She's got Asperger's. She is incredibly socially awkward at 16. You know, everybody's a little bit socially awkward. And she's being exploited by the left, but then that's nothing new. They go into a school like Parkland and they gather up all the students who are liberal and say, who wants to be a star? We need to get the faces of you kids out there and put you forward and make you the message. And then you get someone like Boss David Hogg, who's now probably, I think he's going to Harvard. God, you imagine hanging out with that guy? Who is, you know, he's the face of gun control, and then he's used up and disposed of, and they just move on to the next one, and they ignore all the students and anybody with a contrary opinion, contrary, you know, anything. It's their worldview. They just put it forth as, here's David Hogg, and he believes that all guns should be banned. Let's all put him on television. Well, what about the hundreds of students who don't agree with David Hogg? They don't exist. You see, he's billed as representing Parkland students. There was no vote. It's just like, you know, Al Sharpton. He is a leader in the black community. Well, when was that election held? Who appointed him? Well, you see, the white people who run MSNBC. Oh, okay. Well, there you go. That's how it works. Well, Greta is different. David Hogg walked into this willingly. He seems, in lieu of having biceps, he wants attention and glowing media adoration, and he's gotten it. Greta, I think, probably has been indoctrinated, for sure. But she is not comfortable in the spotlight. Somebody is putting her out there. Now, a normal set of parents would pull her aside and protect her from the ever-present eye of the media and the spotlight. There's a reason she doesn't do a lot of interviews, because she's, you know, she's got Asperger. She's not comfortable doing it. She seems horribly awkward. That hasn't stopped the media in this country from fawning over her. Now, remember, this clip that you're about to hear is a montage. Interspersed into it is put together by Grabian, which is a website that collects a bunch of clips. It's interspersed with her speaking when she first arrived in New York on her little sailboat. Which, by the way, was zero carbon emissions, and then they had to fly crew members over to the United States to ride it back home, to sail it back home. So the planes were going overhead. Instead of one butt in the seat, there were two butts in two seats. But interspersed with these media glowing, you know, gushing over her, is her talking. You can't see it in the podcast, but her face is horrified. She gets off the boat, and there's a whole throng of media and liberals, of course, it's New York, fawning over her. And she's not comfortable with it. And I just have to wonder, where the hell are her parents? Why are they not saying, look, this isn't a good scene for her, okay? Well, she'll speak at the UN or whatever, but having a whole gaggle of people screaming her name and treating her like she's a god, it's just not healthy for her. They don't do that. They let it happen. Whoever her handlers are, and somebody's paying a pretty penny for this, is exploiting her. But pay attention to the adults, too. And you can hear the look of terror on Thunberg's face. But listen to the adults. These are supposed journalists. These are people whose job it is to report on what's going on in the world. There is no reporting going on about this 16-year-old girl. She is simply a monkey there to dance for them. They needed a face that wouldn't embarrass them, that would come out and say, I'm worried about what the world is going to be and the world you're leaving for us and the horrible situation. It should be. Somebody in this country should be doing this about our national debt, to be perfectly honest with you, because it's the kids who are going to be screwed. If my kid could string together a sentence that didn't have to do with PJ Masks or Mickey Mouse or Elmo and Cookie Monster, I'd have her out there sounding this alarm, the real alarm, the coming fiscal collapse of essentially the Western world because of deficit spending and overspending. That's not that the government doesn't have enough money, it's that they just spend more. But that's neither here nor there. Listen to this media montage of grown adults fawning over a 16-year-old girl being exploited by the left.
And ahoy, Greta! Teenage climate activist Greta Thunberg arrives in New York today with her campaign to save the planet.
Go, Greta, go!
Sorry, my brain is not working correctly.
I am so smitten with this little girl that keep reminding myself she's only 16.
Let's not wait any longer. Let's do it now. Yes.
Teenage activist Greta Thunberg, she's elevated the issue, I'd say, more than most.
Some are calling it the Greta Thunberg effect.
You could call it the Greta effect.
I mean, of course, I wished this was more not focused on me, but more as a whole.
She's amazing.
Yeah.
And so committed at such a young age.
At just 16 years old, it's incredible.
And when I became maybe 11, I became depressed, and the climate crisis was a huge cause of that.
We have activists like Greta Thunberg.
It's the youngest person on the list, 16-year-old Greta Thunberg.
Like 16-year-old Greta Thunberg.
And of course, different countries have different, different ways.
And I love this little girl. She's so unapologetic and poised. I saw her speak in Stockholm, and she had the whole room mesmerized before she even opened her mouth.
And that's why, I guess.
Thunberg became the unlikely leader of a global youth movement who call her the voice of the planet.
Yeah, no, just heap some more pressure on this 16-year-old girl who's been suffering depression since she was 11, and then somebody filled her head with left-wing garbage and have ruined her life already. Because, hey, you know what? We've got a poster girl. Let's put her on the cover of Time magazine. Let's get her out there. Let's have her do speeches. There's nothing people who are socially awkward like more than being thrust into the public spotlight. But, what, you know, what's one more person being exploited in the name of progressivism? That's all it really is. It's so sad to watch. It, like, she looks like Children of the Corn. She looks terrified. She's got this blank stare on her face and wondering, why are all these people looking at me? Stop cheering me. Stop yelling. Just leave me alone. I have no doubt she believes in this stuff. She's been inundated with it her whole life. But she's also 16. She should not be considered a world leader. She should not be receiving glowing praise from Oprah's friend there, Gayle King. Oh, I'm so in awe of her. I saw her speak and sweet and what? Well, how'd you get over there, Gayle? Did you swim? Did you take that special boat that has zero carbon emissions? Maybe, I suspect you flew private, probably on one of Oprah's planes, but that's neither here nor there. Hypocrisy, of course, is rife on the left. They want to tell you how to live. They don't want to live that way. And if they have to exploit a 16-year-old girl to do it, well, so be it. Speaking of 16-year-old girls being exploited, Chris Hayes, yes, Rachel Maddow 2.0. He's the non-binary Rachel Maddow over there at MSNBC. I think his show is on at 8 o'clock. I think it is. He had a special. The left is going nuts on the Electoral College. They really hate the Electoral College. They hate anything that stands in the way of them getting what they want, of them being able to impose what they want to impose on the American people. And the Electoral College that empowers, you know, states that aren't New York and California, they hate it. They want to get rid of it. So they've started this new idea. Well, it's the Electoral College is racist. That's what it is. The Electoral College is racist, and it's based in slavery. It's not. But they don't care. They either don't know or they don't care. On this one, I doubt that they know American history. They know American history insofar as they read Howard Zinn, but that's like reading Mad Magazine and thinking you're up with the times. It's just not the case. Listen to Chris Hayes. It's about a 300-pound difference between the two. Listen to Chris Hayes talk about the Electoral College, and he really thinks, and theoretically this was written. So this was written by probably a staffer, read by Chris Hayes, read by a couple of producers, put into a teleprompter by somebody who does that. The executive producer probably signed off on this, and they think they're on to something with this thought. They think this is deep. Now, this is deep insofar as like the conversations I used to have with friends in college while high and or drunk. It's that kind of deep. You think, oh my God, this is brilliant. And then you when you're sober, you look back upon what you were talking about and you go, my God, we were so wasted last night. We don't put it on TV. We didn't put it on TV then. MSNBC puts it on TV. This is Chris Hayes on the Electoral College and why, well, let him explain it.
But I think there's actually a deeper philosophical thing happening, which is the question of what exactly American democracy is for. And the weirdest thing about the Electoral College is the fact that if it wasn't specifically in the Constitution for the presidency, it would be unconstitutional.
The weirdest thing is about murder is if it weren't specifically illegal, it would be legal. I mean, how dumb do you have to be? Who sits around and goes, you know, we got to really get into this Electoral College thing. It's burning up all the liberal talk shows, of which there are none. And we've got to really ride that wave. And Chris goes, I think I've got a great way to put this. If it weren't in the Constitution, it would be unconstitutional. See, the thing that the left doesn't, I mean, aside from being incredibly stupid, what the left doesn't understand about this country is we are, the federal government was created by the states. The federal government did not create the states. We are a union of states. That's where the United States part comes from. It seems pretty obvious when you put it in those terms. And there was a possibility that we would not have formed a nation, as it were. We were essentially 13 different nations after the Revolution. We had a loose sort of contract with the Articles of Confederation, but we had no desire after the Revolution, after the victory in the Revolution, to unite as one. The reason the Articles of Confederation came about was because we recognized that individually we weren't all that strong and we needed to kind of act on a united front. But the people of Virginia and the people of Pennsylvania did not consider themselves to be Americans. They did not look at, you know, the people in Massachusetts, did not look at the people in South Carolina or even in Rhode Island and go, you know what, we are one and the same. We are all in this together. No, they were Virginians, they were Rhode Islanders, they were Massachusetts, or whatever the hell those weird people up there are called. They were Pennsylvanians, they were New Yorkers. That was essentially their country. But they weren't large enough individually to have as much influence on the world stage and get things done as far as trade, which was the main reason that the articles were brought about and the main interest they had in the rest of the world. They didn't want to get involved in others' wars. They didn't look to conquer anywhere. They'd just thrown off the shackles of England and wanted to build their economies. And they said that they decided, rightly so, that together they could probably have a better shot at doing those sorts of things. Now, the Articles of Confederation were a complete disaster, but that's irrelevant to this story. When they came together for the Constitutional Convention, which was supposed to just be to tweak the Articles of Confederation, and then they just scrapped it completely and kept it all secret, they knew that they had to officially form a nation. But those states didn't really want to give up their sovereignty. Hence the way our Constitution is written. In theory, we have a part-time government that doesn't do very much. What the federal government is supposed to do is very explicitly laid out in the Constitution. And then the Constitution was set about being raped by everybody who's ever gotten power in Washington, D.C., and the power's never really been rolled back at all. The growth rate has varied speed-wise depending on who's in charge. But the states wanted their sovereignty. People in Pennsylvania didn't care what people in Delaware were passing, were doing, were writing laws. You could do whatever the hell you wanted in Delaware, write whatever laws you want for the people of Delaware, and it wouldn't have impacted the people of Pennsylvania. The people of Pennsylvania were happy with that. The people in Delaware were happy with that. The people in Maryland could pass whatever screwed up laws they wanted, and the people in Massachusetts could look at them and go, whatever, I'm not a Marylander, so what do I care? But when it came to the big issues, mostly dealing with foreign governments and regulating the trade between the states, because they almost got into wars quite a bit and battles over those sorts of issues, they said we need some sort of third party, something overarching. And this, we can't have Delaware going to war with Pennsylvania because they've put a tax on or a tariff on whatever the hell Delaware sells to Pennsylvania. Biden's, maybe. Who knows? Maybe that's why Pennsylvania, because he was born in Scranton, maybe that's why Pennsylvania sent Biden to Delaware. Sabotage for historical wrongs. Who knows? But that was the purpose of the federal government, to deal with the inner workings between the states and to put a face and deal with the rest of the world. A part-time legislature, the Congress used to meet for about 2 months a year. That was it. People would go to Washington, and then they'd have to go back to their real lives and make a living. Politics wasn't a career. It was never supposed to be a career in this country, but then, as always happens, power becomes so addictive and so alluring that people just start abusing it because they want to maintain it. They sell it, everything you know. But our government was not, the point of our government is never to be a democracy. We were a union of states, and each state decides who they want to be president of the United States. And you had to convince enough states, majorities in enough states, to become president of the United States. Otherwise, you could have just campaigned in Massachusetts, in Pennsylvania, and in New York, and you'd win the presidency. It didn't matter. You could get enough popular votes out of those states back then that you could just impose your will on the rest of the country. Well, the people in the South, the Democrats who were defending slavery, weren't going to be happy with that if a Northerner got elected. And the people in the North were not going to be happy if a Southerner, if the South just managed to elect the president every year. So they devised the Electoral College to keep the states as separate entities, which is what they're supposed to be. Now, we've since bastardized it with a direct election of senators and all sorts of other things. I've talked about that in the past. But that's the purpose for the existence of the Electoral College. And that is why states like Iowa and Michigan and Ohio and Illinois and Wisconsin and Nebraska and all the places that these elite liberals dump their planes' chemical toilets on as they fly from New York to L.A. That's why those states matter. And it pisses these liberals off that those states matter. because honestly, they would win every election based on the popular vote if they just campaigned in New York State and California. Think about the turnout models. When you get, 45 to 50% of the country turning out to vote for president, if you just focused your get out the vote efforts completely in California and New York, they're all on board. Just they're liberals and they go, well, why don't we go vote? Then there are enough liberals voting that the Democrats will win in this state, so we don't have to worry about it. Well, if that became a national popular vote, they would just have a conga line of buses busing everybody in New York and California to the polls. They'd probably make voting compulsory so that they would win every single time. And you say, well, Derek, why don't you just do the same thing in the rest of the country? There isn't enough people in the rest of the country who aren't liberals to overcome that. There aren't. There are conservatives in California and conservatives in New York who don't bother to vote for the same reason. Look, it doesn't matter if I go and mark my ballot or not. These lunatics are going to win, so I'm not going to waste my time. But Nebraska, you think Nebraska's issues would matter? Who would represent the things that matter to Nebraskans in a popular vote election for the president? No one. Oklahoma, forget it. Who would care what Oklahoma would? You would have the coasts dictating to the center of the country what they had to do on everything. Whereas what we should be, and what we still are to a certain extent, is 50 different petri dishes where if one state wants to, if California wants to offer health care to illegal aliens, knock yourself out, California. Go ahead and do it. You want to screw up your state that badly? Then go ahead. Who cares? Because if you're living in Michigan, what do you care what California imposes on its citizens? The problem is California isn't content with imposing its will upon Californians. They know that people can flee California, and people are fleeing California. Actual Americans are leaving California, and they're being replaced by illegal aliens, which is why they want to cook the books on the census. So people can leave. People can vote with their feet, with their moving vans. Well, that poses a problem for California because all the things that they're imposing on people are very expensive. And if the people making the money, the people who like individual liberty are leaving, they're kind of screwed in the long run. But if California can force their liberal policies on every state through the power of the federal government, well, there's nowhere to flee. There's nowhere to run. And then they will get what they want. That's what this is really all about. The Electoral College protects against that. You can't have somebody running for president saying, I will make the whole country California, because 49 states don't want to be California. That's why they want to get rid of it. Chris Hayes isn't that bright, so that's what you get. But he wasn't done, by the way. He's tries to give an example that is, well, it's incredibly stupid. Here it is.
Here's what I mean by that. Starting in the 1960s, 1961, particularly, the Supreme Court started developing a jurisprudence of one person, one vote, right? The idea is that each individual vote has to carry roughly the same amount of weight as each other individual vote, which is a pretty intuitive concept, but it was not a reality. There are all sorts of crazy representational systems that were created that would not give one person one vote and would disenfranchise certain minorities. You can guess which ones. Here's an example. Let's say you got a city, it's 60% black and it's 40% white, okay? Here's how you ensure white people stay in charge. Divide the city into four voting districts, right? But you put the entire black population in one district, 60% of the people. And then each district elects one city council member. And voila! Now the city council for a majority black city is run by a majority white government.
Of course, Chris believes that you can only be represented and should only vote for someone who looks like you, which is stupid and racist. Putting that aside, because that's the progressive party line. And, you know, you're disenfranchising minorities by not putting enough of them in a district or putting too many of them in a district or whatever. The city council is one thing. The federal government is another. We don't redraw the state boundaries every 10 years, every 20 years, ever. We don't move around state boundaries to say, let's put these people into this one and this one into this one. And maybe Chris isn't aware of this. The American people are free to move to whichever state they so choose. Of course, it's interesting that Chris uses that example because that's what Democrats do in gerrymandering. Oh, I know it doesn't get the kind of press that Republican gerrymandering gets because Eric Holder and Barack Obama are out there fighting. It's a new group called On the Line or All on the Line or whatever it is, fighting against gerrymandering because those evil Republicans wouldn't win otherwise without them picking their voters. Well, I use again the example of Maryland, something that they, this group that is opposed to gerrymandering, never ever talks about. Maryland used to have three members of Congress that were Republicans. Now, that might seem like a long time ago, but it was just 10 years ago. Three of them. The Democratic governor, Martin O'Malley at the time, and the Democratic legislature, which is all powerful in this state because it's an overwhelmingly Democratic state, they sat down to redraw the congressional districts and tried to eliminate all of the Republicans in Congress. They couldn't. They could only eliminate two. So now Maryland only has one Republican in Congress in Washington, D.C. We didn't have an exodus from this state of Republicans. The Democrats just basically drew a district map that even Martin O'Malley admitted was designed specifically to get rid of as many Republicans as possible. It looks like a wet Rorschach test that somebody sneezed on. It is a joke. It is an absolute scam. And it is not a problem to Democrats. They don't seem bothered by it because it benefited their team. That's the problem in politics. When you try and find somebody who's principled in politics, you will come up empty every single time. But in that case, Chris Hayes's argument would hold a little bit of water. When you draw the districts of a city to put all the minorities into one district, which doesn't happen, by the way, then yes, you could end up with somebody who is not of the color of the majority of the city running the city. But those cities also elect mayors. Those are, you know, citywide. And aside from that fact and the fact that these cities are controlled by Democrats, no matter what color the person is, it's not about the skin color of the person in power. It's about the idiotic political philosophy of them. When Baltimore had half their city council retire or decide to run for mayor in 2015, I think it was, I thought, I had hope. I was living in Baltimore at the time, so maybe it was 2014. I had hope for the city. I thought, oh, this would be a good opportunity to get some new blood in there. Well, they elected people who have the same philosophy and advocate the same failed policies as the people who were leaving office. It didn't matter. Musical chairs, as long as there's a butt in the chair that does the same thing as the old butt in the chair, you're going to get the same result. And as we see, we've gotten the same result in the city of Baltimore. But what Chris Hayes is trying to argue is actually the antithesis of what the Electoral College is. The Electoral College isn't redrawn. They don't redraw a state. Oh, let's put Cleveland in Michigan. We'll just scoop out Cleveland. We'll make it connected by boat to Michigan. And we'll put Chicago, which is also, if you just scoop out the lower half of Lake Michigan and put Chicago into Michigan as well, then Republicans will always win Ohio and Republicans will always win Illinois. That's not what happens with the Electoral College, Chris. And I don't think he knows that. I honestly don't think he knows that, But I definitely know that whoever knows that and wrote this for him to read on television is hoping that the audience doesn't know that. And what's sad about the state of the education system in this country is that there's a better than 50% chance that they're correct, that the audience does not, in fact, know that. It's sad. It's scary. This is what passes for intellect. Chris Hayes is thought of as a very smart progressive, and he puts on a very smart show on MSNBC, but he's not smart. He doesn't understand the basics of the Constitution, the founding of this country, the purpose of an institution like the Electoral College, or even what the necessary and constitutional functions of the federal government are supposed to be. He's just a child in a toy aisle who knows that he wants the latest Barbie, and he's going to throw a temper tantrum until he gets it. Sadly, there's about 42% of the population in this country who are either willing to go along with that temper tantrum or are willing to throw one of their own for the same reasons. That's why it's so important that we vote, that we get out there, that we counter them. Another important reason, last bit of audio, last bit for the show. I just want to play this clip of Elizabeth Warren speaking over the weekend. I believe it was in New Hampshire. My God, you would think she has a unicorn that just craps money. And she believes that taxing the so-called super rich, just 2 cents on the dollar after they start making their fortunes, she thinks that that unicorn will spring forth with an avalanche of hard currency diarrhea and be able to pay for everything. I want you to hear the list of things that she plans to pay for based on her little 2% tax on the uber wealthy, which she'll eventually have to come after you because, little secret, there aren't enough uber wealthy people in the world to pay for all the crap that she's proposing here.
When you make it big, I mean really big, I mean the top 0.1% big, pitch in 2 cents so everybody else gets a chance to make it in this country. 2 cents. 2 cents. Because now comes the fun part. What can we do with 2 cents in America? I'll tell you exactly what we can do. First, we can have universal child care for every baby in this country age 0 to 5. 100% of them. Yep. Universal pre-K for every 3-year-old and 4-year-old in this country. Raise the wages of every preschool teacher and child care worker in America. We can do all of that, but I'm not through yet. All of that for 2 cents. Plus, we can make technical school, 2-year college, 4-year college, tuition free for every person who wants to get an education. Plus, we can level the playing field, put $50 billion into our historically black colleges and universities. Yep. And I'm still not through. We can do all of that and cancel student loan debt for 95% of the folks who've got student loan debt. Think about that. 2 cents. And by the way, we'd still have a couple of $100 billion left over.
Yeah, boy, her money-crapping unicorn just got diarrhea. Let's go to town. Just 2 cents every dollar that the uber-wealthy do. Who knew there was that much money sitting out there? Of course, math has a funny way of slapping people upside the face, but it's a presidential campaign. Why bother people with things like facts and reality and the idea that this is a pipe dream and those things cost a hell of a lot more than she could ever raise. And they're going to have to come after your wallets. They're going to make a move. Mark my words. It is the third day of September 2019. In the next 5 years, Democrats will be talking about government control over your 401ks. I guarantee it. The government, especially if the stock market ever goes down, and say, well, the government has to step in and protect that money. Government can administer those things, and you watch. They're coming after everything we've got because they, in their minds, have already spent it. You notice her little wish list there. It didn't even include socialized medicine. She's not even getting started. She's barely getting warmed up, and she's already spent trillions of dollars. But she thinks, don't worry, it's paid for. We can just put a tax down there. The wealthy, of course, are known for their willingness to pay taxes. And tax increases are known for their beneficial impact on the U.S. economy, right? I mean, aside from the fact that there really is no history of that. Other than that, it sounds like sound economics to me. That's what we're up against, ladies and gentlemen. Wow, I'm burdening you of all responsibility. Why should you raise your kids when we can get daycare from the second they're born? And then we'll start indoctrinating them in the school system 2 years earlier, starting at three. We'll call it universal pre-K. What could possibly go wrong? And then we'll take care of them through all of their college. And they'll come out at the end of this factory, little left-wing monsters, willing to do our bidding. Germany tried a system like that, a sort of getting to the kids while they're young, the tobacco company model. I forget how the German experiment worked out, but I don't think it was good for anybody involved. There's your modern Democratic Party. Cradle to grave. They want to take you from the cradle, and they'll put you in the grave. And they'll take care of everything in between. Just don't try too hard, don't step out of line, don't think different, or they'll come after you like a rabid spider monkey, and they'll try and eat your face off. That is all the time we have for today on that cheery thought. I'm Derek Hunter. You can email me, derek@dailycaller.com. It's good. It's another week. It's a short week. I told you it was going to be a short week. I love these four-day work weeks. We've got Sean Parnell coming up on Friday. You're going to love that interview. Love Sean Parnell. His book is out today, All Out War. Pick up a copy, order it on Amazon or Barnes & Noble. I got the audio book. You will not regret it, whatever form you get it. It's a hell of a thriller. And email me if you want to be entered to win a signed copy. Only one, because I'm an idiot. Forgot to have him sign the other one. One signed copy of James Hassan's book, Stand Down. Otherwise, compliments, complaints, whatever you got. Thanks for sharing. Thanks for spending the time. I'll see you tomorrow.
The weirdest thing about the Electoral College is the fact that if it wasn't specifically in the Constitution for the presidency, it would be unconstitutional.